Welcome to the Features Podcast for third quarter 2011. This is the second annual Silver Horse Awards, and actually our first podcast for the Silver Horse Awards by Gaming Insurrection. I'm the editor-in-chief of Gaming Insurrection, Lindsay Mosley, and I'm joined by associate editor Jamie Mosley.
Hello out there.
Hello. And we are going to talk about our honorees for this year. This is our first one, as I mentioned before, because our second Silver Horse Awards, we actually had time to record a podcast this year. E3 is a little behind us, so we've got a little time ahead of us to do a podcast and produce it and get it out so that you can get all of our podcasts at one time. So that is why this is our actual first Silver Horse Awards podcast, yet it is our second annual Silver Horse Awards. Last year, we highlighted five games that we thought were influential and brought something to the table, as we like to say, Gaming Insurrection. And so this year, we decided we were going to highlight the designers, some of the most famous designers in the industry who we think have contributed greatly to the cause, as it were. And so this year we are highlighting four people. All four are very well-known names in the video game industry that have a varied body of work and have done quite a bit to push the industry forward. Wouldn't you say, James?
Oh, yeah. These people have not only helped push the industry forward, but have helped future developers, those now and those up and coming. They help inspire them to keep pushing the envelope a lot with how to proceed in future gaming, open up brilliant ideas, and maybe push the technology a lot further than what it's been pushed so far.
Yeah, I would think so. Also, I definitely think all four of these have pushed technology forward, they've been inspired, and they've pushed the industry forward as a whole in, you know, more than one area, be it, you know, console work, software work, just the companies in general, they've pushed them forward. So, let's get started. Our first honoree, everybody has played this man's games. I mean, everybody. Like, everybody on this planet at some point in time have played this man's games. They know his stuff. They may not necessarily know his name, but they know that he made video games possible. And that person is Shigeru Miyamoto. And Mr. Miyamoto, of course, works for Nintendo and is known as the father of Mario, Zelda and Link, Donkey Kong, F-Zero with Captain Falcon, and I can't even think of the other guy's name. F-Zero. But Star Fox, he kind of came up with Star Fox too. Let's see, what else? I mean, I know those right off the top of my head. He's also had his hand in Metroid at some point. Later versions of Metroid, because that's actually Gunpei Yokoi, or Yokai, that came up with Metroid and actually developed the first Metroid and Super Metroid. But Shigeru Miyamoto basically runs Nintendo. If it were not for him, there would be no video games after 1985, really. And actually 1983 with Donkey Kong, but definitely 1985. And I give that date because that's when Super Mario Brothers came out. And it has influenced so many people that, I mean, that's almost the end-all be-all for some people. I mean, and then you've got Zelda. Zelda has, like, pushed so many people into the industry as well.
Well, yeah, I have to respect the man. I mean, I'm not a huge Mario fan. And I have played Mario many occasions, but I was more a Legend of Zelda fan. And I don't know whether it's because I played it first before I played Mario. I think I did. But it might have something to do with the whole fantasy open world aspect that I love about it. And at the time when it came out, there really wasn't anything like that. So he helped pave the way to make video games, you know, way it is now. Because the only thing you compare it to then was this little yellow dot that opened and closed its mouth and being chased by a ghost. And, you know, that's waka, waka, waka was the only sound you got. So,
I actually am not a big, huge Zelda fan. I'm not. It's because I played Super Mario first. I'm a huge Mario fan. If I have to pick anything by Shigeru Miyamoto that I absolutely love, it would be Mario almost immediately. As a matter of fact, Mario is in my... There are several games, Mario games, in my top, like, 20 list of games that I think are greatest of all time. And the majority of the Mario, main Mario games, are in that list. I love Mario that much. Now, I'm not a big, huge fan of Nintendo these days, and, I mean, there's reasons behind that, and you can see it on our website. I've done several columns and editorials about it, but I have love for Mr. Miyamoto. Like, I would be that fangirl, and you know I don't use that term often. I don't like using the term often, but I would be a Mario fangirl. I would be the one that, when I met Shigeru Miyamoto and I named my baby Samus, I would have my baby's birth certificate, and I would be dressed as probably either Mario or Peach when I met him. And I would be, like, screaming, oh, my God, it's Shigeru Miyamoto. Like, I would know him on the street if I saw him. And he would be like, security, please come get this woman off me. And he'd say it in Japanese. And he would be like, security, please come get this woman off of me. She's crazy. But, yes, I'm the kind of person, I would be, like, just crazed. And he would be like, no more fan meetings from now on, okay? But, yes, I am actually a huge Mario fan. So, I love Shigeru Miyamoto's work. And I've actually played other things besides Mario. I mean, obviously. I mean, I play Mario Kart. It's not a Mario platform game.
Well, I play some Mario Kart. I mean, who hasn't played Mario Kart? I mean, it definitely changed the way racing was seen. At least, because definitely, you know, before then, everyone figured if you got to race, you got to be in a kart, or there's got to be some kind of strange atmosphere going on. While Mario Kart showed that you can race in something that everyone can associate with, because kids know about go-karts and adults know about go-karts. So,
well, the thing about Mario Kart that was so awesome was that it's extremely easy. Anybody can pick up Mario Kart and play it right now. If you go back and play the original Super Mario Kart on Super Nintendo right now, anybody can play it. And I mean, there is some depth there, and that's the thing about all of his games, is that there's always a hidden layer of depth to it. It looks, it's deceptively easy, and anybody can pick it up and play it. Like, I could pick up The Legend of Zelda, and when I did, I had not played The Legend of Zelda. I was 19 years old the first time I played that. But I just picked it up and started playing it, as if I had always been playing it. And that's the thing about his games, is that anybody can pick it up and play it. And that's the same thing with Super Mario Kart. There's depth and strategy to it. And you can be a Mario Kart master. I mean, you have to be really good at Mario Kart to be considered a Mario Kart master. But Mario Kart is like Super Mario Brothers. And, I mean, we'll get more in depth about how I feel about Super Mario Brothers much later for a feature when we do stuff on Super Mario. But what I really love about Super Mario Brothers is that anybody can sit down and play a game of Super Mario Brothers. It is literally making this man run, jump, and move from point A to point B in a specified amount of time. That is basically what Super Mario Brothers is about. I mean, you could go through the game without even using a power-up if you really wanted to. You don't have to. And that's what I really like about Super Mario Brothers. It's base, it's simple, it's easy. You ain't got to memorize no controls or anything. All you need to know is how to make Mario run and jump. That's it. That's it. He can avoid enemies if he wants to. You don't even have to learn how to jump on an enemy and kick it and get him one up. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't even have to go through what would be considered the advanced parts of the game. All you need to know is how to move from point A to point B through 36 stages. That's it. And that is what I love about Shigeru Miyamoto. He breaks it down for everybody on in layman's terms. And he makes things simple. You know, like say for instance with Wii Sports, with the original Wii Sports. Now people call it a tech demo and all and show off what the Wii could do. Okay, yeah, and the controls were a little crappy, but you know, it helped me understand tennis. It really did. It helped me understand the game of tennis. And once I got the basics of tennis, I can now sit down and watch a tennis game and fully understand what's going on. There's a few more advanced. I mean, there's obviously strategy to tennis and whatever, and you got to be really good to do well at it. But I can understand the basics of tennis just from playing that game. And I'm sure I could do it with somebody else's game. But I'd rather do it with Shigeru Miyamoto's game. Same thing with golf. I actually understood golf for the first time in my life. I actually tried to understand what was going on in golf. Because I'm not a golf fan. Golf is boring as crap when you're watching it on TV. And I'm probably sure it's probably boring too in person. Tennis is not quite as boring. But in person. On TV it's a little boring. But the point here is, I finally understood what golf was about. They were like, okay, you have 5 chances to get the ball from here to there and into the hole. If you get it in under 5, if you do it within 5 shots, that's par. If you get it under 5, you are 3 under par. You know what I'm saying? Like, you were so many under par. Like, I understood that finally. I didn't understand what they were trying to say because I never tried to. But once I actually played Wii Sports, I was like, oh, this makes sense now. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, with that kind of stuff, it's easy. And the same thing with like, Donkey Kong. You were trying to get Mario, or Jumpman at this point. You were trying to get him from point A to point B. That's it. And then it loops after the 3rd or 4th stage, depending on what you're playing, which version you're playing. I mean, like, that's easy. It's easy.
Yeah, I mean, you have to respect the way he was thinking, because at the same time he was developing Super Mario Brothers, he was also developing The Legend of Zelda, trying to show that they're completely different. Mm-hmm. And I guess it makes sense. If you want one part to be as simple and easy for everyone, but you want the other one to be equally as easy, but be completely opposite by making it, one, the view change is not a side-scroller. You know, on Legend of Zelda, of course, you're seeing from the bird's-eye view. And yeah. It's open world. You don't have to go in any particular order. While in Super Mario Brothers, you have no choice but to go by order, except if you use warps or anything like that. But still, you got to do an order in that kind of way. So I have to say that the man was a genius when he came up with that plan. Of course, he showed his genius when he made Donkey Kong, and it sold millions. I remember putting many a quarters in an arcade machine playing Donkey Kong because I couldn't quite understand. Let's see, I'm supposed to make him go up, but this fireball is keep coming down here. I'm gonna jump over it. I can't make it because this fireball is coming at me, and now there's a barrel coming at me. Maybe I should go back and get this hammer. Hammer makes it easy. How come I can't climb up this ladder with the hammer? Oh. I'll just wait till the hammer runs up, and then I can climb up the ladder. I mean, once you start figuring out everything, you see how easy it was. And for some reason, as a small child, I always believed that once you get to the top, the monkey was going to be angry at you and throw you back down. So I never tried to make it to the top until I was a little older.
Well, he wasn't called Donkey Kong for nothing, because as legend has it, he was called Donkey Kong because they associated Kong with King Kong, which is a monkey, obviously. And Donkey, it goes that he came up with Donkey because the animal made an ass of himself. Thus, donkey. You know, he was a stupid monkey, basically. So, that is how they came up with Donkey Kong. But, yes, the monkey wasn't going to be angry and throw you back down. Dang, the monkey was angry, but he wasn't going to throw you back down. I was a grown person before I actually played Donkey Kong. And, you know, I can understand the appeal of Donkey Kong. I can. But I'm not a fan of Donkey Kong. I like playing him. I do like playing him in Super Smash Bros. Because he's like Hulk. He's basically the Hulk of the game. And he tends to do crazy damage to people and takes crazy damage. I mean, you can be beating on Hulk for like, I mean, Hulk and Donkey Kong, and I refer to him as Hulk in the game, but you can beat on him and get him up to like 300% damage before he even looks like he's going to be knocked off. And he will keep coming back. And Monkey also likes to commit suicide. He likes to grab you and jump off with you. Thus preventing you from saving yourself. Also, what I like about him is the fact that this is weird. I mean, as I was told later on, he is a great ape. He is not necessarily a monkey. He's a great ape. And I was like, Monkey Kong? Ape Kong? But that is, I was like, what do you mean he's not a monkey? Oh, there is a difference. They are different species of the same thing. Like, monkeys and apes are simians, aren't they?
Well, yeah, but of course there's difference between being an ape and a monkey. I mean, it's obvious you can tell that Donkey Kong's a gorilla, which is definitely not a monkey. So,
yes.
I mean, and then what really throws everybody off, of course, is, you know, all of a sudden you have Donkey Kong Jr., which is a monkey. So,
was he a monkey? I thought Donkey Kong Jr. was an ape. I thought he was actually an ape.
No, he's got a tail.
Donkey Kong Jr. has a tail?
He has a tail.
No, that's what's his face? That's Diddy. Diddy Kong's got a tail. Diddy Kong, which doesn't make any sense, because Diddy Kong's he's a chimpanzee. I do believe he's considered a chimpanzee.
He can be a chimpanzee.
Or is he a monkey?
He's a part of ape.
Oh, so he is considered a monkey.
Yes.
See, this don't even make sense. I'm like, wait a minute. But Diddy Kong's a monkey, but Donkey Kong is a great ape and can be a silverback if you make him, you know, you pick different colors for him, whatever. Yes. He can even be a silverback if you want him to. But I don't understand that. And wouldn't Donkey Kong actually, like, eat Diddy Kong? If they were out in the wild, the gorillas would eat the monkeys.
Not necessarily. I mean, I'm pretty sure you eat more vegetable than anything else, but I can't see a Nintendo making sure that an ape would make sure it eats its a monkey. I mean, I can't see Nintendo do that at all.
So, eat his little monkey companion.
So I can't see that at all. So I'm going to go ahead and say no. Completely vegetarian.
Oh.
So.
Yes, I don't think he eats meat. Except for maybe the what are the little things are they the gremlins? What is King K. Rool? What was he? He was a gorilla. What? No, he wasn't a gorilla. He was an alligator or a crocodile or something.
Yeah.
What are the things you fight in Donkey Kong Country? I think he would probably eat those. But he was mad because they stole a banana hoard in Donkey Kong Country. But, I mean, like, And the thing, especially about Shigeru Miyamoto, and I like to posit this theory, is that all his games have hidden themes behind them. Now, I'm proffering this theory as an adult, okay? I'm going to proffer this as an adult, because as a child, I didn't even think about it. It didn't even occur to me as a child. But, you know, I swear Mario is about drug use, the dangers of drug use. Because why is this man eating mushrooms and getting large and then he shrinks back? But But according to him, he thinks he is getting larger and smaller. He's not necessarily getting larger and smaller. The little Mario that you see when you start out at the very beginning of the game with no mushroom is actually his real size. They have confirmed that is his real size. He eats a mushroom and thinks he's huge. Okay, so he takes a hit, he goes back to small Mario. Alright, then he's like puffing away on this fire flower that allows him to shoot fireballs. What is that about, Nintendo? Okay, then the biggest reason why I always, once I got to be an adult and I thought about it, that I thought that was about drug use, is because this man eats a star. He takes a star and he thinks he is invincible and he runs into things. And when it wears off, he is no longer invincible. I was like, hello, LSD and angel dust. So I was like, okay, Shigeru Miyamoto, what's going on here? Then you got Bowser fighting him for the princess, and he gets these gold coins. What is that all about? Just gold coins just randomly scattered around the place. And then sometimes you got to give Toad gold coins. Really? Bowser even takes gold coins from you at some point in the games. Like one of the games, you have to give him gold coins. Really? Drug deal gone bad, Nintendo? The Legend of Zelda, I swore him down, was about big business and the evils of big business, because it's a triangle thing there with the Triforce. The Triforce is businesses, big business corporations. So The Legend of Zelda, yeah, that one you gotta do a little bit of research on and know about the gold standard in the United States, you know, ages ago. And then Pikmin, I'ma tell y'all, I'ma be honest with y'all. I have played Pikmin. I played the original Pikmin. Pikmin is about slavery. Pikmin is about the evils of slavery in America. And I say this as a black person. Pikmin was about slavery. Because when I sat there and I was playing Pikmin, I was like, now why am I growing these little people in fields out here? And then I got them going out there and doing my business for me. And then I let them get eaten by this giant monster creature that lives on the planet. What is that all about? Seriously, I'm going to let you people starve. And notice I said you people. I'm going to let you different colored people go out here and do my business, and then I'm gonna let you get eaten and killed out in the field by some crazy man who wants to liberate you? Really? This is... I was like, oh, Nintendo, this is not cool. Now, Pikmin itself wasn't a bad game. I didn't like the time element to it, but it was actually interesting. You had to learn how to use teamwork to solve problems and recover your pieces of your ship that it scattered on the planet that you landed on, because you would die in 30 days if you didn't. But I thought that was actually interesting and well done. It's just I didn't like the time element. The time element threw me off in it, and time passed too fast for me in the game. But, I mean, if they're going to give me a time element, that's fine, but, you know, don't make me lose time too fast. But what I'm saying is I always can find a hidden element to Shigeru Miyamoto's games. I think the only one I can think of that does not have a hidden element to it is Super Mario Kart. I can't think of any hidden element to that one. And Mario Kart is very simple. There's probably nothing to that except they just like to ride go-karts in the Mushroom Kingdom, you know, on theme tracks, which is awesome.
Well, I guess if you had to think of it really hard, and I'm pretty sure the only thing he thought about was, let's develop this game. This is the only storyline we got with it. Now, adults come up with all the things. Then you look at adults, it's like, y'all just crazy. I don't see how y'all get that. But if you're going to come up with one for Super Mario Kart, you can think of it as the dangers of NASCAR and IndyCar racing.
Bootleg.
Because since all that started, well, at least in America, you know, NASCAR started because, you know, they made, you know, alcohol illegal, and people had to drive, you know, they had to drive from point A to point B really fast, so they found a good spot to demonstrate how fast their car was so everybody can see it. so they can make more money off of it. Well, Mario Kart, you're doing the same thing. You take your character. You want to make sure you're the first one in front so you can get the prize. Hence, it's the money that they're going to pay you for carrying that boost to point A, from point A to point B. So you do whatever it is possible to make sure you're in the front. That's the only way I can see it.
Yes.
So
that might actually be about NASCAR, actually. You know, I bet you he's like a secret NASCAR fan. And he sits up in his house on Sundays with his little dog that was the basis of Nintendogs. And he's sitting up there watching NASCAR. And they're like, hey, look, I think we're going to put that in the next Super Mario game. You going to put that in the next Mario Kart? I think that'd be hot. Actually, I wouldn't be surprised if he did that. But, I mean, I actually really like, I really like his stuff. And there's only been a few games that I can actually say that I do not like by Shigeru Miyamoto. F-Zero is one of them, because I do not like F-Zero. I have played F-Zero, and as you will see, we had a review for F-Zero, I want to say, in the first quarter 2010. I'm sorry, probably first quarter 2011. It may have been. I want to say that was the Ninja Turtles issue, and so that was probably not in that one. It was probably actually second quarter 2011. That we did F-Zero, because I wrote the review for it, and I absolutely detest F-Zero. I detest F-Zero. It is terrible on Super Nintendo. Now, other versions of it have probably been good. It is one of the few but Shigeru Miyamoto designed games that I absolutely do not like and would not play. And that's saying a lot, because hey, I even play some Zelda. I will actually play Zelda, and I'm not a huge fan of Zelda, but I'll play Zelda before I play F-Zero. And I don't think I particularly care for Pilot Wings either, but I think I've played Pilot Wings before. I don't know if I have or not.
I played Pilot Wings. It was okay, but I really wasn't into games that involve flight that much, hence that's the reason why I didn't play Star Fox either. But
oh god, I sat through Star Fox 64 and I will never do that again.
But at the same time, I mean if the man of the games that people around the world have played and know about, because you still get people nowadays, I need to get the original Nintendo so my child can play it. He's only 3. He needs to learn how to play Super Mario Brothers. You still got people saying that.
Yeah.
Then you know your name's going down in history.
Yeah. Yes. The thing about Star Fox 64 that I really disliked, I didn't like the voice acting in it. It was kind of terrible. And a friend of ours who I was dating at the time when Star Fox came out, 64 that is, when Star Fox 64 came out, we used to play our 64 all the time. We both had one. And he played Star Fox 64 and Mario Kart, and I also played Mario Kart, but Star Fox 64 was obnoxious, because if I heard one more time, Fox, I think I'm going to have to sit this one out, I was like, oh my god, stop it, stop it, this is not cute, stop it, this game is not cute. It was obnoxious, so that's probably the only other one that I would not play. But, you know, I actually kind of like the voice acting now for Star Fox, especially once they put it in Brawl and they had Falco say, personally, I prefer death. He didn't actually say, I prefer death. I think he said, I prefer the edge. But I like to say, personally, I prefer death because... because he would go over the side. He would constantly kill himself. What's the one? What did Star Wolf say that we thought was so hilarious? The wolf that's also playable that you played all the time in Brawl.
I don't remember. I don't remember what he said now.
I either. I got the voice files for it though.
I have no idea.
I can't remember.
I have no idea.
It's when he calls out his, when he does his, his when he does his smash ball attack. Gosh, now I'm gonna have to go find the voice files for it, cause I can't remember what he says. It was actually hilarious. it was actually pretty hilarious, cause I know Fox calls out Landmaster. He actually calls out Landmaster when he does it. I can't remember. Anyway, yeah, stay away from Star Fox. I could recommend it if you like to play flying games and you enjoy those kinds of things. Then I'd be like, yeah, play that. But I'm not a huge Star Fox fan either. But overall, I have to say, Shigeru Miyamoto, awesome. I would name my kid Miyamoto if I could. And not be, you know, ostracized for the rest of my life. And my kid not wound up hating me. So, moving on. We are at another man on this list. Now, his works aren't exactly as high as Shigeru Miyamoto's. I mean, he ain't got that many works. Not as much as Shigeru Miyamoto. But he still is regarded as one of the best in the industry. And he still can get people talking about his stuff, and they know who he is in the industry without all you got to say is his name, and people immediately know what he's done. And most people wouldn't know this, but all you have to say is, I feel asleep. I feel asleep, or put a giant question mark over your head. Or, I'm sorry, exclamation mark. You got to put a giant exclamation mark over your head. We're talking about Hideo Kojima, Mr. Kojima.
Well, I have to say that being a child of the 80s, I played a lot of the original Metal Gear. And it was something about this guy ended up in this woods and walking through, I'm sorry, forest, and he's in the jungle. So you walk through the jungle and you're being chased by dogs. Which is random for me to be in the jungle and there's dogs out there, but it's no problem. Then you hear this man, then you see this man on the other side, he walks and he stops, he's on a patrol, he stops his patrol and falls asleep so you can walk right by. But then, the best part ever, when people say, I fell asleep.
I feel asleep.
Yeah, he did, he said, I feel asleep.
That was because it was a spelling error.
It was really bad, and that game was absolutely awesome. I played it a lot, over and over and over. And did I mention over? So I played that one until it couldn't work anymore, and then I went and bought another one, played it some more. But the man was fantastic. It was genius at the time because there was nothing like it at the time, actually. And then when Metal Gear Solid came out, I did not instantly go out and buy it. I went out and bought it the second day it was up, not the first day. So, and I too played that, and I played it a good bit, but I didn't beat it into the ground as much as I did the original, so... the man is highly well known for, if anybody see him, they automatically think Metal Gear, usually Metal Gear Solid, or Snake Eater, or any other Metal Gear they can think of after that. The only thing they think of is Metal Gear and Snake. So, he's highly respected, and all over the world. I don't think there's a country he can go to that he won't be recognized. So...
Yeah, I have played the demo of Metal Gear Solid, and I'm going to tell you, I mean, at the time I was seeing someone who was, when Metal Gear Solid came out, that was all about Metal Gear Solid. If it wasn't Metal Gear Solid, it was Final Fantasy VII. And I was like, really? Okay, there are other games coming out, people. Can we please stop talking about Metal Gear Solid? I get it. It's a really good game, and it is actually a good game. I have fallen asleep on Metal Gear Solid, but it's actually not a bad game. And, you know, if I had time, I would probably go back and play it again, and I would probably like it now because I have time to sit down and engross myself in the storyline and figure out what's going on. But I did not care for Metal Gear Solid, but I give Mr. Kojima his respect because the man know how to make a cinematic experience and knows how to make a good game.
The thing about Metal Gear Solid that completely threw everybody off, and because I originally was done the same way, was you fought against Praying Mantis, who seemed to know exactly what you've been playing or what you've been doing.
Psycho Mantis.
I'm sorry. It was Psycho Mantis.
Psycho Mantis.
And,
well, the only reason why I know it's Psycho Mantis, and this is because I've read up on the storyline of Metal Gear, the whole thing, like all the way through 4, and I happened to be awake at that sequence in the game, and I was like, oh, I know how to do this part. I had read so much about the game at this point that when my then boyfriend was playing it, that I woke up, I sat up, and I looked, and I was like, Psycho Mantis? And he looked at me and he was like, how do you know who Psycho Mantis is? And I was like, just because I don't like Metal Gear doesn't mean I don't know who Psycho Mantis is. By the way, unplug your controller because you're going to find out very shortly what he's going to do with that. And so he was all like, okay. And he played through the sequence. I'm not going to give it away, but he played through that sequence. And yeah. Psycho Mantis was interesting.
What always gets me is, although that was, I mean, I remember reading about it and even seeing online where people said that was one of the most creepy things that they ever experienced in the game. I mean, which is says a lot considering that Resident Evil was considered a survival horror then. I'm actually surprised there's a lot, even now, that a lot of people still don't use that.
Yeah.
So, but you have to say that was complete genius on his part. Aggravating a lot to a extent, but it was complete genius on his part to have that in the game.
Yeah, I've heard he's actually used that in 4 as well. He used it in 3 or 4, one of the two games, Metal Gear Solid. I seem to recall hearing that he used that again because I remember saying, oh, really? He went back to that trick? But, I mean, he's actually very, very visionary. I tend to like his stuff. He has very, very high production values. His production values out of Kojima Productions is pretty high. It's pretty high.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's one of those kind of developers that everything must get his stamp of approval before it leaves, and I'm sure he thoroughly tests everything. As in, he plays it himself in the beginning, the betas, in between, sits down with the game testers. I'm pretty sure they have lots of meetings about what's going on and playing hours upon hours at a time before it's even released, or before he even mentions that he's producing something. So he just seems more like a complete hands-on kind of person.
Yeah. Well, have you played, I've been meaning to ask you, have you played Boktai, The Sun Is In Your Hands?
I did not play that one.
I remember when it came out, and it was for GBA, and it was a game, you literally had to go outside and play it in the sun. you couldn't really advance in the game if you didn't play it in the sun. And so, of course, when people were trying to emulate it much later, it was almost impossible to do it. They found ways to work around it, but it was almost impossible to do it at first because how can you emulate that, you know? So it was interesting. You know, I remember them announcing the sequel at one of the recent E3s, and it came out. I don't remember when. I want to say it came out in 2004, but I remember at one of the recent E3s they announced the next Boktai. They announced another one, Golden Dawn or something. Nintendo did, and it was at one of the recent ones. I want to say 2009, so it must not have come out yet, or it was canceled or something. I don't remember, but I remember them announcing that. And I always thought that was very inventive and visionary that he used the sun element for the gameplay for that game.
Well, it's a great way to get kids to go outside. And
yes.
Nintendo was all about, you know, kids being kids. So, I mean, with something like that, most parents preach like child staying inside too much playing these games and everything. We need to get them to do something else. So what's the best way? Have a video game that child needs to be outside doing. So that was completely genius on his part. Completely.
Yes, I think so. So wrapping up Mr. Kojima, I'm excited to see where he's going with this Metal Gear franchise. I mean, he said he's stepping away from it and he ain't gonna do it anymore, but I mean, nowadays I'd actually play Metal Gear. I'm a little, because I've read up on the storyline, I know what's going on, and I could play the game and follow and understand. So I would play one of the, I'd play the new one with Raiden, or Raiden, however you want to pronounce it, Raiden, Metal Gear Solid Rising. I would play it, or Metal Gear Rising, I can't remember what it's called. I would play it, definitely. And I really wanted to play Peace Walker. I thought Peace Walker was interesting with the multiplayer, with the multiple snakes on PSP. I thought that was extremely interesting. And it looked really good for that to be a PSP game.
Well, again, these developers are known for pushing the envelope in technology, so if anyone's going to do it, they would definitely do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. So, moving on, we're wrapping up Mr. Kojima, and we're moving on to who I consider the arcade man. This man has done a lot for arcades. Now, keep in mind, the arcades are not exactly, you know, on the upswing right now. But this man has contributed so much to the arcades, it's ridiculous. I mean, he basically made his name with the arcades. And we're talking about Yu Suzuki.
Yeah, I mean, I remember going to arcades and pumping many of tokens in his games. Mainly because they attracted to me straight to, I mean, you have Hang On and yep. Super Hang On.
Yep.
And as a little kid, you walk in and the first thing you see is this motorcycle sitting on the side. What do you think you're going to do?
Yeah.
You're going to go over there, you're going to stand up to the motorcycle and you're going to try to play it. And the first game I ever remember, racing game, I completely remember playing in arcade was Outrun. And I played so much Outrun, it was ridiculous because at the time I was in love with Ferrari. And that's what they had on there. And I used to play that game so much, it got to the point where you were going up a hill. I would literally try to stand up and look to see what was coming over the hill. Knowing you couldn't do it, but still, I tried to do that just in case to make sure you didn't hear anything. So the game had a great feel. As an arcade racer go, I think that most arcade games now are still doing the same thing. If you look at a game that came out years afterwards, Hydro Thunder,
mm-hmm.
used basically the same elements, you're just on water.
Yeah.
It was basically the same thing. You had a boost. Outrun didn't have a boost, but it could have a boost. It was a Ferrari. And you had Hang On to use the same thing as Outrun did, except you're racing a motorcycle instead. And you didn't have a passenger. So, those games, I've always said that it excites me. Even to this day, I can pick up an Outrun and start playing it like crazy. It was an easy, simple racing game.
Mm. I did not play Outrun and Hang On. I didn't play those. I had heard of them, though, and Space Harrier. I had heard of Space Harrier. I'd heard of course, Afterburner. I remember when Afterburner came out on NES. But what I had played and what I'd heard of was Virtual Racing. I played that. And Virtual Fighter. I'd also heard of Virtual Cop. I remember when Virtual Cop came out in the arcade. I loved Virtual Fighter 4. I did. I thought that was one of the most gorgeous games I had ever seen in my entire life. It made everything else, even Tekken, which was gorgeous even in 4. By the time both of those got to 4, they were both really good-looking games. But it, Virtua Fighter made Tekken look like... They usually go back and forth anyway. Virtua Fighter and Tekken in terms of graphics and how they look in terms of graphics and what they can accomplish. But Virtua Fighter 4 Evo and Virtua Fighter 4 made Tekken 4 look like Tekken 2. Now, Virtua Fighter 5 and Tekken 5 are a little bit closer in terms of you know, how good the graphics looking. And that's not even to say that Tekken 4's graphics were bad. Because they were still really good. But that's just how good Virtua Fighter 4's graphics were. And I've actually attempted to learn how to play Virtua Fighter. And it's hard for me because I can't really pick up those kind of fighters these days. I have to have something simple like Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat. I can't play anything that requires a lot of technical know-how because I can't do it. It doesn't stick. It does not stick in my brain. I will never remember the moveset. So, Virtua Fighter, though, I have actually tried to play, and it's a really good series. I think they had a little misstep there with 3. They had a little misstep with 3 on Dreamcast, but it still was pretty. It was still a very pretty game. It's just technically they had a little they had a few flaws and problems there with it, but overall, though, Virtua Fighter is a good series, and the Virtua series itself is actually not bad. What people like to forget here is that the man also made Shenmue, which was one of the biggest flops in the history of the game industry, and it still sold a lot of copies. It has a very devoted following. I've played through the beginning of Shenmue, and it's not a bad game. I can see how it might have been slightly tedious and a little overly ambitious, but it's not a bad game.
Well, I think everyone who gave Shenmue a really bad review, most of them are probably kicking themselves in the pants because it was one of those games that all the critics said, you know, the game's horrible, stay away from it. And a couple of people went out and bought it. And they let a couple other friends borrow it.
Yep,
and,
word of mouth.
And those people start buying it. And then other people start buying it. And the next thing you know, the critics are like, so what's the hottest thing out there being sold? Shenmue. Didn't we give that a bad review? Why are they buying it? So then I can see them now going back there to the game testers and say, what game are you playing right now, Shenmue? But we gave it like a 2 out of 10. Yeah, you did, didn't you? Yeah. Why don't you play a little bit?
Yeah.
So, it proves that, you know, I mean, at the time, when that game came out, everyone had a strict, this is what games need to be policy.
Yeah.
And Shenmue basically broke all of that.
People wasn't ready for Shenmue. I remember thinking that when Shenmue came out, I remember saying, people are not ready for this. This is too ambitious and too ahead of its time right now.
Yeah, I agree. It was ahead of its time, but there was a lot of games on the Dreamcast that was ahead of its time, but that one was definitely ahead of its time. That game came out right now, guaranteed people will be playing it. Well, maybe not necessarily right now because there's a lot of games similar to it now, but you know what I mean. If that game just came out now doing this mainstream, you know, it would be,
yep,
it would still be considered much higher on the critics list than it was then.
Yeah, and people are still wanting that sequel. Now, he got his little phone game that's coming out, Shenmue City. Not the Shenmue City, but he's talking about he's doing one for the phones in Japan. And I'm like, really? Come on, man. Do something with Shenmue. If you put out Shenmue right now, somebody will play it in America. There's too many people who love Shenmue here that will not, you know, that won't sleep on that game now. And it's a perfect chance for them to re-release Shenmue and people be like, oh, okay, I see the hype, and play it. Like, Shenmue shouldn't have flopped the way it did. It shouldn't have. It cost $70 million to make it in 1999. $70 million. I mean, there's some movies that ain't even $70 million. There's a lot of movies that ain't $70 million. I mean, the budget of this game was $70 million. That's, according to my write-up for Mr. Suzuki, that's equivalent to $93 million in today's figures. $93 million to make this game. That's a lot of money. Some games these days have a comparable budget, but not many. I mean, you got like a Grand Theft Auto, that might be a $93 million. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's a budget that's $93 million. I mean, or what else? Red Dead Redemption probably was a $93
million. Well, that's because, well, Red Dead, you know, they already have the Red Dead following. So, you put the name Red Dead on something, the people who played the original Red Dead Revolver automatically going to buy it. So, and since Redemption was so successful, you know, if you put Red Dead on it, you could say Red Dead Apocalypse on there, and people still want to buy it. But with Shenmue, they had high hopes.
Yes, very
big
high
dreams. And Americans, for some reason, always think things completely different, such as video games need to do this. And they can't be having all this drama stuff on there. We don't want to interact with what's going on in the real world. We don't want any of this.
Never mind the fact that Shenmue pioneered the use of QuickTime events. And who later on started using QuickTime events?
Yeah.
God of War.
Yeah. Everybody starts using it after that.
Yep. So. God of War. I won't even say it's even in Assassin's Creed. I'm probably wrong about that in Assassin's Creed, so don't quote me on that. But I know for a fact God of War is all about the QuickTime events. It's all about QuickTime events. The first one is, at least. And you got to use QuickTime events in Marvel Ultimate Alliance, too, don't you? The first Marvel Ultimate Alliance, excuse me.
You're going to use some QuickTime in that. And even Soul Calibur had it in there. Soul Calibur 3 had it in
there. Yes, so. in the endings for Soul Calibur 3.
Yes.
And I was like, really? Everybody using QuickTime events now. And I'm sure I know those aren't the only ones that use QuickTime events. But my point here is, Shenmue was the basis for all of that. It was one of the first, if not the first, to use QuickTime events and pioneer the uses of it. So why is there not? I mean, I know there's Shenmue 2 and it came out on Xbox. But this was supposed to be like a 10 or 11 chapter game. It was supposed to be like 17 chapters or something. I could be wrong on that, but I know it was supposed to be a multi-chapter game, and they only got like 2 chapters out before they said no more. So I think if he came out with Shenmue and he wrapped up that story and explained everything that's going on, I think it'll sell.
Well, he can do it now in less budget. Well, maybe in less budget now because he doesn't have to release that many discs anymore.
Mm-hmm.
With the way the networks are.
Yep.
He can actually now just release one game, and then you can just have all the download content or anything else added onto it. Or do like everyone else, just put it on Steam and people will automatically buy it.
Yeah.
So, and they'll continue to keep buying it. Because you say that now to any heavy gamer out there, Shenmue, and it's, oh, man, yeah, they need to go ahead and make another one of those. Or they can do one called Shenmue The Lost Chapters and have all of them on there. And, I mean, granted, the game probably be like $70 to $80. I guarantee people will still pay it.
Yeah. I mean, the following for Shenmue is huge. It's crazy. I don't understand. I don't understand. Like, I just don't get that. But anyway, we're going to move on. And to our last honoree, who, he's not a game designer. He is a game designer, but he's not a game designer. He doesn't necessarily do the coding behind the games. He just does the sound. He is the sound man, one of the sound men in the industry. And we decided to honor him because, even though he doesn't code up games and he doesn't actually come up with scenarios and campaigns and all that, he's still an integral part of the process. And you have heard this man's work. If you play any kind of video game, you have probably heard this man's work or know where his music comes from. We are talking about Nobu Uematsu of Final Fantasy fame and of the Black Mages.
Well, first thing you hear is about Final Fantasy is people raising the roof. And the first thing I always think about is the people raising the roof and doing the nice little fanfare. Dun, 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 dun. So I always think that. And I mean, the man is very well known. And all the Final Fantasy, I remember playing Final Fantasy, the original Final Fantasy, and the sound was a little different, but still, as in music-wise, though it's still superb compared to what everything else. He tried to integrate a lot of different notes, melodies to all together. And it sounded like he was trying to use more instruments than what everyone else did. I mean, during a time when you had somebody who, you know, probably sat down at this little keyboard and everything and only came up with a few notes. Dun, 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 dun. I mean, and he came up with some really great stuff.
He did. And I saw the man who came up with that little tune that you just hummed for us. And he said he only had a little bit that he could work with. I was like, what's your excuse, dude, when you got Nobu Uematsu and Koji Kondo pumping out stuff that sound like orchestras?
The difference was these guys got paid lots of money. This guy, they paid him a pack of beer. And they gave him a Slim Jim.
They gave him a Slim Jim and a pack of beer.
There's a pack of beer and your Slim Jim sit in this dark ass room, come up with something in 5 minutes. 5 minutes! Dun, dun, dun. I think we're gonna roll with that. Give him another pack of beer.
I believe that's probably true. That dude did not look like he really wanted to be composing music for video games. I saw a picture of him because I was like, oh, that's the dude that did Hard Drive. Oh, that's him? He should be ashamed of himself.
Well, back to the man here. Final Fantasy has inspired many people, especially game developers and producers. Anyone who writes games, the first thing they think about is not only the story of what's going on in the game, but what's the music going with it? Because now they have to fit. If the music's off, then that completely throws the whole story off. So he showed that even with Final Fantasy, the complete storyline could be horrible. But if the music's great with the storyline, people will still play it.
Yes. And you know, I'm not a big Final Fantasy fan. I'm not. I have played... I've played at least two and three of the series games. And I've played other Square stuff that's like Final Fantasy. But what I like about Nobu Uematsu is he really seems to enjoy what he does. You know what I mean? Like, he likes coming up with music. And as much as I dislike Final Fantasy VII, God, I got roped into watching Advent Children, and I actually bought Advent Children. I do like Sephiroth's theme, One Wing Angel. I do like it. I don't like Final Fantasy VII. I greatly dislike Final Fantasy VII. But I do like One Winged Angel. It's actually not a bad song. And I love the fact that he used the chorus in there. That guy's like one of the few where he got somebody actually saying his name in the song. Like, that's actually pretty high. It's kind of silly, but the fact that it...
That's how you know you got your own theme song.
Yes. Yes. But that's what I like about it. And I like Final Fantasy V's music. That's the one Final Fantasy that I really enjoy playing. And we've talked about Final Fantasy V. We've done a review on it, and it's been in one of our Editor's Weekly podcasts. Where we talked extensively about the job class and stuff like that. And I don't even know if he did if he did it for Tactics. Did he do the music for Tactics? I think somebody else did it for Tactics.
Somebody else did it for Tactics and everything, but of course they always have to put in the song in there because it won't be Final Fantasy unless you have the fanfare. But I do know that he has pushed the envelope with amount of music that can be on any game cartridge. And he pushed the envelope on the amount of music that you can put on any disc. So he doesn't necessarily, I don't think he will put out anything he doesn't feel hold in. Like, if it doesn't feel like it fits well, I don't think he's going to say, just go ahead and run it because I'm short of time. I think what he does is he sits down and he looks to see what's going on. He tries to get a feel before he starts writing it up. And, I mean, you can tell that I'm not a huge Final Fantasy VII player, but I've watched the videos. I've played some of it, and I've noticed that none of the music seemed out of sync. Shocking moment, there would be a slight pause, and then dramatic music come behind there. And the fact that he wrote a full song for Sephiroth with people singing and chanting his name, with the orchestra also playing,
yes,
shows that, you know, his skills and everything. But again, he's always pushed the envelope about what amount of music can be on there, the feel, because the feel is really what makes the game. You can have a great storyline. If you don't have any music, no one's going to like it. So, and he proved that even if your game's bad, which Final Fantasy, the original Final Fantasy, was not necessarily the best Final Fantasy out of the series, but it was a good start. He did the music in it, and it's really enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the music of Final Fantasy V so much, I bought the soundtrack. I actually bought the original sound version that was on CD, that he released on CD, and it's taken directly from the game. But I really like Final Fantasy V's music. And I tend to like a lot of Final Fantasy music. It's just I have to really get into the mindset of listening to it. But that's not to say he's not good. I mean, he's done other stuff besides Final Fantasy. Like, what's the game by Lost Odyssey? I was thinking about Mist Walker. Their game, Lost Odyssey. He did the music for that.
Apes World.
Oh, he did. Yeah, did he do? Yeah, he did that too.
I'm trying to remember. Did he do Apes World? I think he did do Apes World. I'm not sure.
It's not on my list. But
maybe not.
I don't know.
I do know about Aliens, though.
Yeah.
And I played some Rad Racer, I'll tell you what.
Yes, we have a review coming up for Rad Racer, as a matter of fact. That is a Square game. I did not know that until I was reading Jamie's review for Rad Racer, and I was like, oh, I did not know this was a Square game. Interesting.
Yes, good old Square. I think they were Squaresoft. No, they were Square then, and later become Squaresoft. And become Square Enix after that.
Yes.
I think that's how it was. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so. Yes, they merged with Enix later. But it was after 1996 when they merged with Enix, because Mario RPG was one of the last games that they did under the Square label. So.
Well, I know here in America, most of this works. The only thing people want to know is Final Fantasy. Including that guy, you know, that spoke nothing but Final Fantasy. Back in Anderson, South Carolina, all he could say was Final Fantasy. I'm pretty sure he had something to say about the music of Final Fantasy and that subject, since he kept saying Final Fantasy. And although I'm saying Final Fantasy quite often, I'm not saying Final Fantasy as much as the guy who talked about Final Fantasy.
No, because wasn't he the one that, you were working at GameStop at the time, and he was saying that He was the one. Did somebody mention Final Fantasy? Let me tell you about Final Fantasy. I like Final Fantasy 1 through 7. Did you play Final Fantasy 8? Final Fantasy is the greatest RPG ever made. I remember you describing this to me. I was like, oh. He said Final Fantasy how many times in a complete sentence? That's crazy. He needs to stop.
Yeah, he said Final Fantasy quite often, and, you know, even when we saw that guy today, he won't remember saying it, and he probably wouldn't say it that much, but at the time, Final Fantasy XII was coming out, and I remember we said something about it, and he's like, did you say Final Fantasy? Well, I'll tell you, I played every single Final Fantasy, including the first Final Fantasy. Did you play the first Final Fantasy? First Final Fantasy was a little different from the rest of the Final Fantasies. Which one was your favorite Final Fantasy? What do you think about Final Fantasy 12? Have you heard anything about Final Fantasy 13? I've got an account on Final Fantasy 11. Final Fantasy 11, you know, the online RPG where you got to pay to be on there? I played that. I mean, it's a decent Final Fantasy, but it's not real Final Fantasy. Are you sure about this Final Fantasy 12 going to be anything like Final Fantasy 11? If it's true, then it's not a true Final Fantasy.
Oh my God. See, that's not even cool. Like, I mean, I understand, like, I love Mario. I do. I love me some Mario. But, like, my every sentence does not end and start with Mario and Nintendo. It doesn't. It does not at all. That's crazy. Like, why would you? I don't understand. I'm not following. Out there is loving a game series, and then there's that guy. That's too much. You know, I think we should start a column called That Guy. Where we talk about people like that guy who just ruin things. No. Why would you say Final Fantasy that often in a column? I mean, like, why would you say that often?
He didn't really ruin it for me. I just thought it was funny. The man obviously loved Final Fantasy. And Final Fantasy had a very special spot in his heart. Yeah. He must have had some kind of dark and troubled time, and that was the only thing that brought him out. But, that being said, there's always this point of time where someone will say something about, you can say no wrong about a certain brand. Like, there are people who say, you can't say anything bad about Sony, and they'll keep going on and on about Sony, and Sony can never do any wrong. Or Nintendo.
Oh, what? Or that gentleman that said, it's such a good system.
Yes. So, I mean, anything like that, you know, is going to always happen. It just so happened at the time where Final Fantasy XII was coming out, and that guy was probably thinking about Final Fantasy, and he was excited about it. So, I'm guessing that's what happened. Now, that being said, in Final Fantasy XII, it wasn't a creative hit that everybody thought it was going to be. But it was still pretty good, and the music on it was just absolutely amazing. So, I'm going to go ahead and say that guy probably played the other Final Fantasies after that. And listened to the music also. Because when it comes to music in the video games being great, you have to have Final Fantasy on that list. I mean, there's no way you can't have Final Fantasy on there.
Yeah, I actually have the. I took the idea from Advent Children, and I have the Final Fantasy Win theme from 5. I use the one from 5 because it's slightly different in each game. I use the Win theme, the beginning part of the Win theme, for text messages on my phone. Which should tell you how crucial Nobu Uematsu is. He is the sole reason right now while people doing concerts and stuff for video game music with the Play Video Game Symphony and Video Games Live is such a big deal in the gaming industry and why people will go see these things. He is one of the sole reasons why. His music was one of the first ones that started that. And also, you know, he formed his own band, the Black Mages, and they used to travel around and play Final Fantasy music, his compositions for Final Fantasy, because he owns it, you know. He lets them use it in Final Fantasy now. He actually lets them use that, but... the Black Mages broke up in, I think, 2004, or, no, it may have been recently, they may have broken up recently, but, as a matter of fact, I think it was recently that they broke up, which is a shame. I thought it was awesome that he had formed a band and that they played music, so I'm kind of like, the mini bosses that formed and they play, go around playing retro music, video game music, but... Yeah, Nobu Uematsu pioneered that too. In addition to, you know, making video game music awesome. Him and Koji Kondo. So, yeah, we have to salute Mr. Uematsu for his contributions, even though he wasn't exactly a code junkie or anything like that. Nah, he's more musically oriented, but he contributed a whole lot to the industry. I mean, he made stuff sound like something. So, thank y'all for listening. This wraps up our features podcast for the third quarter 2011 for the Silver Horse Awards. Keep a listen out. Next year we'll be back with another podcast about our next year's honorees in 2012. And keep a lookout. This is going to be a regular feature for the third quarter 2012. And it's going to be a regular feature thereafter, hopefully. And every year we try to pair up E3 and the GI Awards and do podcasts for both. So keep a listen out for those. And, you know, let us know what you think about them. So, anything else you want to say before we go?
Final Fantasy.
And Mario. But anyway, thank y'all for listening, and we'll talk to y'all real soon.